So post-colonialism focuses on deconstructing binaries, mainly West versus East. With reference to popular post-colonial theorist Homi Bhabha, what's the problem with binary logic?
Binary logics are part of what is known as colonial discourse theory. And colonial discourse theory was set up as a way of thinking about binaries, as a way of constructing binaries, which is what post-colonial theory seeks to dismantle. And binaries are absolutely embedded in European Enlightenment thought, where you have this idea of the separation of the body and the mind. So many people will trace the start of binaries to Descartes' I think, therefore I am.
Yeah.
So where your way of thinking actually establishes the difference between your mind as a thinking thing and your body as something else. And a lot of binaries have resulted from that. So, for example, the classic binary between the self and the other, the man and woman. In terms of colonial discourse theory, very quickly, colonial discourse theory established a binary between Europe as the center, as the Eurocentric epicenter of the world, and the lands that it colonized. It needed to justify, Europe needed to justify why it needed to actually colonize these lands. Because if you look at Enlightenment theory, it's about the enlightenment of man. It is about man as the center of universe. Anthropomorphism starts at that point of time. For the first time, you have human beings as occupying the center place in the earth. Now, if human beings are at the center of the world, then that there should be a kind of equality around the world. But there isn't. Colonialism and capitalism ensured that there isn't that equality. So how do you justify colonizing all these other lands? You justify it by establishing Europe as the place is modern, it is advanced. And in order to justify colonizing of other lands, you have to prove that they are primitive or barbaric. So there is that dichotomy, there is that binary established. So you have Europe saying, here we are the center of civilization, we will take civilization to these uncivilized lands. Again, another binary. Yeah. Also, in terms of capitalism, you have this idea of Europe being the place which has all the technology, resources, and industry. So Europe is the place for that kind of, in modern terms, innovation, whereas all the other colonized lands are the resource-rich places where you can draw both resources as well as labor.
Yeah, so you mention in there the sometimes said to be the universal truth of philosophy, the cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. And then you also compare this to the universal standard of Western dominance as it's seen in, you know, European history. How do cultural values challenge that, particularly when we look at the innovations that counter those binary thoughts of traditional colonial thinking?
I think two words that you used are very important in this kind of a discussion. You use the word universal and you use the word cultural. Both of those are also, in some ways, they are the inheritors of that kind of a burden of Enlightenment understanding. So this idea that there is something called a universal value, while that might be true in terms of all cultures or all places in the world, imagine that these are the values that can be applied to this category of beings, whether they're human beings or animals. So there's a kind of universality that you might need food and shelter that might extend to other things. But one of the things that Enlightenment and what followed in the wake of colonialism and capitalism is that a thing called culture came into being. And that culture, it was a kind of signifier for otherization. So when you wanted to otherize a place, for example, the most famous enunciation of this is in Edward Said's Orientalism, where the East is supposed to be the repository of this kind of exotic, inviting, but at the same time evil and corrupting influence. Whereas the West is rational. The West is because cogito ergo sum, the West is rational, and therefore it has to resist that which is on the other side. So then culture becomes a word which only denotes the realm of the other. Europe in that way sees itself as somehow neutral.
Yeah. Now, another old term that's kind of recently been resurfacing is the idea of the yellow peril, particularly with some racial associations with the ongoing pandemic. What is the yellow peril and why is this othering of people such a big issue in this climate?
I don't think it's a big issue only in this climate.
Mm.
The idea of yellow peril can be traced back to the genesis of the color line that emerges as the handmaiden of colonialism. You know, race as a category of analysis emerges at the time when all these changes are taking place in European thought. And each one of those kinds of ways of categorization, whether we think of Darwin's theory of evolution of man, whether we think of the Linnaean way of categorizing and classifying plants, all of these things have implications for colonization. So when you start classifying and categorizing creatures of the planet, if you want to put it a more neutral term, then that classification is not neutral in any way. It always comes loaded with value judgment.
Yeah.
So you're not dividing the world up into white, yellow, pink, brown people, black people. It's always a way of creating another. So when we have these kinds of colors assigned to groups of people, that is a technology of race that is used, a mechanism of race and racism that is used to actually otherize huge sections of society from which Western civilization both has to extract its resources as well as defend itself against. So yellow peril or yellow terror, if you want to call it that, it's kind of a challenge. It's kind of a challenge to the entire sense of European sense of the self. So Asia is created as the source, as the opposite source of the yellow peril.
Now, I think the reason that I use the term in this climate is because obviously when we look at cases like MERS and SARS before, we've had similar issues with similar social responses. Why haven't we learned from these previous cases, and why is this same discussion coming up again?
Oh, this is a huge question, really. look, one can't be prescriptive about as to why human beings don't learn from the past.
Yeah.
I think in terms of the contemporary world that we live in, my very short answer would be that a lot of these terms that emerged as a result of colonialism and which was made possible by capitalist enterprise, a lot of these terms came into being that time, and we haven't actually, let alone succeed in the project of decolonization, we haven't even begun to scratch the foundational terms, despite post-colonial theory having been so important and foundational. We haven't actually been able to embark on that project with any kind of rigor. Foundational to that is, for example, in the context of Australia, because we have not actually seen Indigenous people, the colonial nation state has not seen Indigenous people as central to the story and narrative of these lands.
Yeah, totally. And I don't mean to cut you off, but unfortunately that is all the time we have. And thank you for tackling such a big question, because I think it's plainly obvious that if the question was so easily answerable, it probably would have been already answered.